The hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am ready.
Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, April 26th on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
Well, let's go ahead and get started. I'm Kim Grinnell, along with Chris Fetters and the crotchety old man, Scott Eklund. And the chances of this podcast going off the rails is really, really high. And Fetters, are we going to start this like now, or are you going to post the 15 minutes before we started the podcast?
Oh, I don't know. It's totally your guys' call. We can do it. We can do a straw poll.
I guarantee you there's more people who agree with me than agree with you guys.
Oh no, it's fantastic. It's great stuff. And bottom line is it's Friday and we clearly need a football game this week on a Friday for some reason, because yeah, everything is just upside down.
How about this? What about on Tuesday? Let's do a pre-election podcast.
Hey Scott, why don't you just go ahead and say it, you know, just instead of, you know, the elephant in the room, just go ahead and scream. Get off my lawn. Go ahead. Scream.
Yeah,
it.
No, I shout at the clouds. I don't even recognize the people well,
just,
on my lawn.
Just for context for guys, we were talking about the idea of Husky weather and how I think it's been really interesting this week, how I've seen a lot of Washington fans really balking at the idea of Husky weather and not coming to the game because of the weather. And I think Scott actually brought up a really, really good point that due to just the improvements in technology and the convenience and everything. Because when I was a kid, the only way you could really know about what was going on in the game right there, unless you were literally listening to your little radio, would be you'd have to go to the game. It wasn't always going to be on TV. It wasn't always going to be, you know, there's no such thing as streaming or any of that kind of stuff. Now, like Kim was talking about, how he's got three massive TVs in his living room. And he can have not just the one game that he wants to watch, but he can be little football voyeur and watch other games in other parts of the country without any problems whatsoever. And so, yeah, I think it's
and
just
a wine
function.
Cellar. And a wine cellar.
Well, it's a function of technology. You know, everyone's got their man caves now. And clearly, who wants to leave the man cave to go sit in the rain? I get it. It's just weird to me. And I haven't heard it really
That's
kind of expressed in that way.
You're sitting up in the press box, Chris. You got a box lunch. You got a soda machine and you got popcorn. It's all spread out. You got stats being hand fed to you. Yeah.
Stats can be hand fed to you too as well. It's called a cell phone.
How about tonight you go stand on the sit in the stands in the weather and cover the game from a fan's perspective?
Kim, I swear to you, and I'm trying to be as genuine as I can when I say this. If you could type a sentence on a computer, I'd switch places with you. I'd take some pictures. It wouldn't be a problem to me.
We'll work. But after what I went through at Cal?
The fact that you can't write and the fact that you can't type are slight, I just say slight impediments. I'm not saying that they're completely, no can do's. I'm sure you could probably put something together if you really, really had to, gun to your head type stuff. But the way things work, you know.
What would happen to you in the end zone at Cal with Michael Penix?
Oh, that thing would have hit me in the head. I don't know if I would have fallen down, but it definitely would have hit me in the head.
Michael said I should have ducked.
Well, that's easy.
No sympathy whatsoever from Mike Penix.
Well, and if it hits him in the head, it just hits him in the helmet. So he doesn't know. Yeah,
like I said, this thing's going to go off the rails early.
That's all we were talking about. And like I said, I found it really, really interesting. But the more, like what Scott was saying, it makes sense. I mean, it does make sense. I'm not poo-pooing it. I'm not being critical of people that decide to stay home instead of going to the game, maybe because of weather. You know, traffic is obviously going to be just a nightmare. I mean, we've been getting emails from UTUB now telling us where we normally park, where we actually have parking available to us. We can't park there.
North of Burgermaster is where we're going to be. Is that about right?
Yeah. We're going to be up on the side hill in Bedellford. It's not going to be great, but I'm genuinely thinking of trying to come in via the light rail. But, you know, the last light rail going back up to Northgate's like 12:30, and the chances of us getting out of there at 12:30, coin flip at best. And
unless we're
literally trying to sprint our way through all this stuff.
Might canoe in with the weather. Jeez.
But these are the things you have to deal with on a Friday night. And just perusing Twitter, this week, I all of a sudden see like Eric Ainge of all people, the former quarterback from the Portland area, getting in the middle of it because he does Tennessee stuff now because he played at Tennessee, and he's got Georgia fans just all up in a tizzy because he's saying playing between the hedges ain't that big a deal. And I'm thinking, man, this is going to be amazing because the Oregon State Washington game is going to be done with. We get to sit back, and then we get to do all the things that I'm talking about people shouldn't be doing. We get to sit back. We get to lounge. We get to spend our entire Saturday with our bags of popcorn and whatever and watching, you know, arguably, I was thinking about this in terms of the SEC East. Has there ever been a game where it's 1-2 nationally? I don't know. And so we get to see Tennessee and Georgia, and that's going to be an unbelievable game.
Scott's going to take his kids on a tour downtown Seattle tomorrow.
Mm-mm. See, kids, this is what it's like when – never mind. Not going there.
Like I said, the 15 minutes before we started this podcast was definitely off the rails. But Oregon State coming up tonight, 7:30 kickoff on ESPN2. Does ESPN2, is that even on? See, we don't watch the games live, so I never even know what channel the game is on. But is that on regular
ESPN2.
Cable?
ESPN2. Yeah, ESPN2. Yep.
Yeah, it has been forever. I always remember ESPN2 being literally right below ESPN on the channel guide.
Yep. Yeah, so Oregon State coming in, I had a chance to talk to, and Scott, you listened to it with an Oki Brechterfield, you know, just asking about Oregon State. He's just kind of shaking his head. He didn't want to answer any of those questions.
Yeah, that's just not his thing, man. He doesn't talk. He doesn't like talking. He'd rather just get out there and coach and do his thing.
Yeah, I mean, if you had, it was just like pulling teeth talking to an Oki, so. But
well, it's one of those things where obviously there are certain players or certain coaches the closer you get to the game time. Now, this is, like I said, this is even back when we would talk to Chris Peterson, like on a Thursday, for instance. You know, you could see sometimes maybe there was some game face type stuff going on, especially certain questions might trigger things like, oh, okay, he's starting to get into game mode type of thing. And Noki is like one of those guys where it feels like he's always in game mode. Like, it's just whether it's just the intensity or just the I don't know why I have to answer these questions type of thing. But he always feels like he always is kind of has the game face on, even if it was like a Monday for a Saturday night game. It's just like
Chris, he was like that in the spring and fall.
Yeah, so. That's what I'm saying. He's like he's got like perpetual game face.
Yeah, no. It, for those who remember, he was a really, really good player at Oregon State. He was an all-conference guy, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm. He was.
No, he's really good, yeah.
What is he, about 5'11"?
Yeah, somewhere in there, 5'11", 5'10", somewhere.
Yeah, yep. Not the biggest guy, but, it's he's one of those that just, he's not big on the media stuff, but which is fine. The mm-hmm. players seem to like him. So, anyways, but, you know, with the game coming up tonight, with the weather expected to be what it is outside, I don't think there's going to be a lot of balls being thrown in the air. I think everybody's going to focus on the run game. And, Scott, when you take a look at Washington's defense and giving up the run, they haven't been real successful in stopping the run, and that seems to be Oregon State's strength.
Yeah, Washington hasn't been terrible at stopping the run, but they aren't great at it either. I mean, I think part of it's just because some teams have decided, hey, well, why would we run if we can throw the ball all over the place? And that's what they've kind of done. chosen to throw the ball a little bit around a little bit. I don't think Washington's as bad against the run as they were maybe toward the end of Jimmy Lake's reign and everything like that, but they aren't great. And part of it's just because they don't have a lot of difference makers up front. You talked to Breckerfield, and he talked about a little bit about Tuli, Latulikasinoa, and how he's kind of the bell cow up front, and a lot of the kids follow him. But I think that if they had a generational guy like Greg Gaines or Vita Vea was, or even Levi Onwuzurike, I think Washington would probably have Tuli as like a second teamer, like rotational guy, or he would be playing in a different position along the defensive line. So I just don't see a difference maker for the Huskies right now. They got to get someone in there that can be one. You know, maybe Armon Parker can be eventually down the road. Javon Parker's done really well this year. But I just don't see any difference makers. And I think that's been one of the biggest problems. And then the linebackers have gotten washed out in the trash and stuff like that. Now, one guy that we did see kind of come on a little bit against Cal was Chris Maul. And he had a really good game. And I think if he continues to play well, we could see a lot more of him.
Hey, and Scott, Kwau Pehopa.
Yep.
You expecting him back?
No, not this year. If he does come back, we won't see him until spring ball. That's my opinion. I have not heard anything, but I just know what he's kind of going through as far as the steps he has to take to get back in the fold and in the good graces, and it's going to take a while. It's going to take a while.
Yeah, so we'll see how that plays out. But Chris, when you talk about the Washington defense stopping Oregon State, they finally at Cal had their original starting five in the secondary back on the field since the first half against Kent State, since those guys have played together. But is it really going to matter? Do you really expect Oregon State to throw the ball?
Sure, I absolutely do. I mean, they run it about 60% of the time. So that means they're going to be looking to throw 40% of the time, the way the numbers work out. I mean, I'm not great at math, but I've got the addition thing figured out. And yeah, I think they just they're going to be in a situation where they're going to try to do a lot of play action off their runs. They're going to try to utilize the tight ends as much as they can. Now, we've heard Luke Musgrave is not going to be playing in the game tonight, which I think is a huge loss for them. But they have other guys. You know, we talked earlier in the week about Jack Velling, the kid from Seattle Prep, who's doing some things as a true freshman right now for them. You know, he's coming on and he's starting to make some plays for them. It's not like he's killing it. I think he has less than 10 catches, but he already has a 60-yard pass and he scored a touchdown. He's averaging 20 yards a catch. So, you know, these are guys that you all of a sudden can kind of explode onto the scene in games like this when they like to go with two, sometimes three tight end sets. So you start to see some of their depth really start to excel. And so I'll be curious to see how they utilize the pass game, but I'll also be even more curious to see how the weather really impacts these things, because I don't want to be one of those guys that says the rain doesn't impact these games, because it does. But to me, especially when you're looking at the number one passing offense in the country in Washington, I think the wind is going to play even more of a factor. And I think Scott's talked a bunch about that this week as well. You know, the winds swirl in Husky Stadium. Everybody who's a Washington fan knows this. It can be very unpredictable. So we'll see how that affects it as much as the rain, because as far as I'm concerned, the rain may have some things to do with maybe guys not catching passes or the ball. You know, I think with Penix, you know, he's got a big enough hand. He should be able to grip it no problem. I just think that it comes down to ball security. When the guys actually catch it, can they hold on to it? And this is obviously a game where the two teams are pretty evenly matched, and turnovers, sudden change plays like that are going to loom huge.
And the weather's going to impact the game tonight. There's just no doubt about it. I think it's ideal for the run game, but the passing game on both sides, I think it's going to impact. And Washington definitely has the better quarterback, but it looks like Oregon State's definitely got the better run game.
Well, yeah, I led by Damian Martinez, I mean, he's an unbelievable running back, and you know they just have a plethora of guys that they can just throw at you in waves, and Washington's going to have to be ready for it. I mean, the coaches have all talked about it, the players have talked about it, that they know they're going to have to be it's going to be a physical game, and they're going to have to out physical Oregon State, and I just don't know if they can do that.
It's wild, Scott, that I mean, Oregon State just seems to get these guys for offensive line commits. And when you see them, they're guys that the bigger schools have passed on because they're not athletic enough. They tend to be more stompers than athletic. But Oregon State just always seems to have a good offensive line.
Well, yeah. And I mean, for a long time, I don't remember who was under Riley, but for a long time, they were considered to have the number one offensive line coach in the entire, if not the entire Pac-12, also the entire country, you know. And and now they've got Mike Mihalchik, who's widely regarded as one of the better offensive line coaches out there. So Jim Mihalchik, sorry. And you know, I think that they do more with less. I mean, that's just kind of been their mantra always. When Oregon State has been successful, it's because they've found coaches who can do more with less, and that's what Jonathan Smith has done. They've got talent, don't get me wrong, but it's not on the level of an Oregon or a USC or even Washington. I mean, if you went down Washington the list on Washington's roster, Washington is the more talented team. But Oregon State just does – they play hard, tough football. They actually remind me a lot of the Don James teams of the, you know, of the 80s and 90s and what they do.
And it's former Washington offensive line coach Jim Mihalchik.
Yeah, for about 10 minutes.
Steve Sarkisian's first offensive line coach at Washington.
Was he here 2 days or
2 days?
Three?
It was 2 days. Two or 3 days.
And he got
I don't even know if he actually ever made it up to Washington.
No, he did. I actually met him in person. So, Okay. Yes, he did make it up to Washington, but it wasn't very long.
Yeah, and then the Raiders came and said, hey, you want to coach to the NFL? He said, see ya.
Yeah.
And then they hired who'd they hire?
Dan Cazzetto.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen Dan in a while. I think he's still down in Arizona.
He's been in Arizona, I think, for a while now.
Is there anything more painful than watching Dan Cazzetto with his, you know, a bionic shoulder, bionic hip, bionic knee, bionic ankle out there in the middle of practice in the rain and the wind and the cold, just limping around and yelling at an offensive lineman?
I still remember Dan Cazzetto taking a phone call from me a couple days before signing day, and he sounded really groggy. I go, I wake you up out of a nap? He goes, no, I'm in the recovery room. I just had shoulder surgery. Like, what are you doing answering your phone?
See, if that, Kim, I don't know what you were saying, how that's painful. To me, that's inspiring. Watch that guy run around, man. I'm like, I got to get off my fat butt and let's go.
Do you remember him when we were there and him screaming at the guy, I don't know who did it. I don't know who the hell offered you a scholarship. And I think it was Ryan Tolar he was going on.
Ben Osai was one of his whipping boys, too. So.
I think I go through this like once a year. Well, and I always talk about this. Every offensive line coach that's ever come to Washington will eventually come up to you and ask you two questions. First of all, who recruited these guys?
Yeah.
And what was he teaching them? Because whatever they're doing doesn't make any sense. And to be honest with you, it has only been with offensive line coaches. I've never really heard the same complaint continuously with other position coaches. Now, it may happen with other position coaches from time to time, but by and large, every single offensive line coach that I've talked to, for all the way from Man Alive, all the way from Gilby, all the way through Scott Huff, they have asked us two things: who recruited these guys, and what the hell were they coaching them? It's crazy.
My favorite guy to talk about the offensive line guys, Mike Denbrock. I love Mike Denbrock, but you know, he's been around. He's now the offensive coordinator at LSU. But listening to Mike talk about his offensive linemen, he just would shake his head. He goes, "Yeah, they're offensive linemen. They're not rocket scientists that I got." So.
Well, who was the offensive lineman that was from Idaho that could snowboard? Thomas was his last name.
Oh, Terrence Thomas?
Terrence Thomas. And he was a vegetarian. And I remember Mike Denbrock looking at us and go, what do I do with a vegetarian? A yeah. vegetarian offensive lineman. What the heck am I supposed to do with that?
What was he, 6'7", 260 or something?
Something like that when he came in, yeah.
And a relative of his used to post on our board all the time, which yep. was always comical as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, hey, just an FYI, parents or recruits, yeah, be careful what you post online.
Yeah.
So. Well, yeah, it's like having a one-legged place kicker. In theory, you can make it happen, but really? Is that what you're ideally looking for?
Who was the offensive lineman that went on the mission and came 300 pounds and then came back at 200?
Willie Cava.
Willie Cava. Well, that was – but that you could explain that. That made sense.
He shows back up at 220 pounds.
Took him an entire year. Took him an entire year to get better, to get where he needed to be.
Oh, no, he never did.
But he was never the same once he got back.
I mean, I just remember Denbrock just looking at me and going, what am I supposed to do with this? He's not even as big as our linebackers.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found. Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
I told you, you know, this one thing was going to go off the rails real quick, but
who's directing this thing?
Yeah, I know it's me. So yeah. I was up really late last night for some stupid reason, so coffee hasn't kicked in. But Michael Penix throwing tonight into this god-awful weather. For those who missed it at the Cal game, was it Jalen McMillan he was throwing
yes.
to?
Yes, yes.
Jalen McMillan just got accosted, you know, in the end zone. And Michael Penix threw the ball anyways. They ruled the ball uncatchable. So I don't know why anybody would expect me to catch it. They ruled it uncatchable. But Penix went ahead and threw the ball, and it skipped on the turf like it skips on a rock skipping on the water. Picked up speed and basically just nailed me in the face and knocked me on my butt. It didn't really hurt, but I guess I made John Boy. I made Pac-12 after dark, and they kind of replayed it a couple of times. But I asked Michael if he realized it was me, and he said, no. I said, you don't even sound sorry or anything. And he looked at me and laughed. He said, you should have ducked. So Michael Penix can I'll verify. He throws a nice tight spiral, especially when it's coming right at you, and he's going to need it tonight.
Well, I can also verify that you were very worried that thing might actually get seen on television. And for a guy that was worrying about those kinds of things, you've been bringing it up. You've been eating off of it. Well, this past week or so.
Got to go. Well, I just knew when I fell down. I mean, because it kind of – I was moving out of the way, and it just knocked me off balance. It was the fall that I was worried
what
about.
What I'm waiting for? And I didn't see it because I didn't wake up in time to watch a lot of game day. I wonder if you make the one of their little video montages.
That would have been last week.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, it would have been NFL. Like, come on, man. Yeah. Been one of those guys.
Yeah.
But to be honest, one of the reasons the pregame stuff went off the rails was because you asked me what would happen to me if I got hit in the face. And I was like, same. Except for I'm not sure I would have fallen down, but it's not like I would have avoided it either. I think what people don't understand is that when it hits the track like that, did it hit the back of the end zone, the turf?
No, it just skipped off of the turf.
Yeah, but when it actually skips off like that, it actually increases velocity.
It sure seems like
It just skipped off because it's, you know, it's like skipping a rock in a pond.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't the tip of the football that hit me. It was the side of the football. So that was
you should be lucky for that.
Yeah. No. So, but but like I said, you know, I'm looking forward to tonight to see how Michael Penix navigates the wind. And we talked about this in the podcast before. And Scott, you remember this, talking to Sark when he was talking about quarterbacks, and he was specifically talking about Max Brown, that Max didn't spin the ball that well. And if you're going to play in Husky Stadium, you needed to be able to spin the ball. And that's why, you know, he was going in a different direction rather than, I'm trying to remember who they took over instead of Max.
It was Troy Williams.
Yeah.
They didn't take him instead of.
Right.
Because he chose USC before Williams committed to UW. It was down to three. It was Max Brown. It was the guy who ended up at Alabama. You would think he was out of Utah, maybe Nevada. I can't remember. And they got an official visit out of him and Troy Williams out of Harbor City. What is that? Narbonne High School. And they really turned their focus toward Troy Williams, but that was partly because Max Brown decided that he was going to go. He wasn't going to stay close to home. But
was he in the same class as Keyshawn Bieria?
No, he was after okay. Bieria. Yep. Yeah.
But you remember how Troy used to spin it.
Oh yeah, he had a strong arm, and that was one of the things they liked about him was that. And I know that he didn't do very much under Peterson and Jonathan Smith, but I guarantee you, if Sark had been here, Troy Williams would have had the kind of career that Keith Price had, at least.
And Troy, he went down to Utah, didn't he?
Yeah, and I think it was started for like 16 games, 17 games, something like that.
Yeah. Just was okay.
He wasn't great. He wasn't bad. He was just kind of, okay.
Yeah. Well, the thing, if I'm the Washington coaches tonight, what I'm kind of worried about is getting that run game going with the wind. And then again, you are playing into Oregon State's strength, because their strength is definitely in their secondary.
Yeah, if you throw the ball, yeah, and their run defense is pretty good too. So their defense is actually pretty good all the way around. I mean, what did they hold USC to? Like 17, 20 points, whatever it was. And they've got a good defense. They're not a liability on that side of the ball.
Yeah, who's the defensive coordinator at Oregon State?
It's Trent Bray now. It used to be Tim Tibisar, but yeah, they switched up and now it's Bray.
Yeah, and Bray is being brought up as one of those up and coming guys to keep your eye on.
Yeah, he'll be a head coach someday.
Yeah, I don't know how old is he. Do you know? I know you hate it when
late 30s.
Yeah, like but that. He's a guy that was really well thought of, and you know, like you said, Scott, everybody's got their eye on him, and I think he will be a head coach at some point. So we'll see how that.
Yeah. Goes. But you look at their defensive backfield. I mean, that's some very experienced guys back there. You look at like Alex Austin, you look at Jaden Grant, you look at Oladapo, you look at Rajon Wright. These are all guys that people in the Pac-12 have known about for the last couple of years. So they definitely have some guys with some real experience on that side of the ball. Cause you add in like an Omar Spates, you know, he's a guy that's played a lot. Riley Sharp has played a lot. Simon Sandberg on the defensive line, he's played a lot. So there's definitely some guys over there, Hodgins. It'll be very interesting to see how Washington's offense tries to match up with whatever Oregon State tries to do defensively and what they try to take away. Because I just get the sense that most teams in the Pac-12, they kind of realize you're not going to be able to take everything away from Penix. You've just got to be able to figure out ways to limit what he can do. You know, the classic ESPN, you can't stop him. You can only hope to contain him. So it'll be interesting to see how Oregon State tries to contain Penix.
Yeah, and when we were out at practice talking to coaches on Wednesday, we saw the quarterbacks tipping the footballs in buckets of water. But the coaches pretty much told us, you know, it's not so much in, you know, playing with a wet football, because they can dry a football off, but it's the wet hands that I'm more concerned with than. There's not many. There's a few quarterbacks who play with a glove on. I'm trying to remember who that was that played with a glove.
Oh, most of the guys that play with gloves nowadays have gloves like on the other hand.
Yeah.
Like you think of Tom Brady and guys like that. I've never really understood that. It's like, why do you need a glove on your other hand? But I'm sure they could explain it and it would make total sense and be like, oh, I hadn't thought about it that way. But on first inspection, I'm thinking, wouldn't you rather have it on the hand that you use to throw if you need grip or something like that? But something I've never really understood.
It's got a lot of people have never really picked up or seen or handled, you know, football glove. But the gloves that the wide receivers are wearing, they're sticky. I mean,
yeah, you can't, you couldn't use those for the quarterback glove. There's no way.
Why not? I mean, because it just it seems like it would give you a better grip.
Yeah. Try getting it out of your hands.
Yeah.
It needs to be able to come out of your hands. And if you're getting that, there's just no way. I mean, try throwing one with your hand and then try throwing it with a receiver glove. Not easy.
Was it, Chris, did you work on the Penix, Grubb from the other day where he was talking about Michael's hand size and where he puts his finger placement in order to spin it?
No, I did not.
That was Josh Wodka. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was interesting when he was talking about that, just the index finger placement. And I'm going, oh, man, Hugh Millen's going to listen to this and I'm going to get a phone call. It's going to take 15 minutes for him to explain this to me. So anyways, let's go ahead and wrap this up. We got a lot going on today. So, Scott, wrap it up. Final thoughts.
Well, as people probably have read on our predictions, I predicted Oregon State to win the game. And I just think the wind's going to mess with Washington's offense enough to keep them from scoring a lot of points. I still think they're going to score. And Oregon State's defense is pretty good. But I think Washington will still score. But I just have a hard time believing they're going to score enough to win this game. I've got Oregon winning by about eight. I think it's 8 points. I think I had them at 35, 27, somewhere in there. I think Washington can win this game. But they're going to have to force some turnovers. I don't know how many turnovers they have total, but what was it that you said they have 3 fumble recoveries on the season?
Two
fumble recoveries on the season. And in order for you to get your hands on passes, you got to be close to the receivers. And at times they haven't been close to the receivers. So I think this is going to be a tough game for Washington. I like Oregon State to win this game outright. I think Washington's going to struggle some. Hopefully they don't. Hopefully they come out with a win and prove me wrong. But I think this is going to be a tough game for Washington.
Wrap it up, Chris Fetters.
Well, I think Washington fans should take heart because the last time Scott predicted an opponent win was Michigan State. So I think that's in the bag for Washington. I think this is going to be within a touchdown either way. If this game was being played in Corvallis, I'd probably pick Oregon State. But because it's in Husky Stadium, because it's going to be in an environment where the Husky crowd, whatever Husky crowd is going to be there tonight, can make a difference, I think they will make a difference. I think this is a situation where Scott talked about the fumble recoveries, and it's so, so important to understand this, that for all the upfield rush that Washington's gotten, they have gotten very little production out of it in terms of getting the ball back. And I talked to Eric Schmidt this week about it. He was adamant about it, that they've been working hard to try to make up for that because they understand that those kind of sudden change plays in this type of specific game can make all the difference in the world between a win and a loss. So, Kim, for you, I'm praying for a rain shadow. I think it can happen. And if it does, that will certainly help Washington quite a bit. But even if the rain and the wind comes, I still think that they've got enough in them with their shorter game. Passing game to get the ball in their playmakers' hands to try to get some yak. And it'll be interesting to see how Washington continues to improve on defense, because I think they did take a step against Cal, shut them out for the first half in their house. And I think they'll try to keep working on that. You know, Kalen DeBoer was adamant this week. He said they've had more players available to them than they've had since week one. And that's a positive. They're going to need all of those guys to be able to be available. So I am picking Washington to win this game, but it's going to be within a touchdown, and it's going to be a fourth quarter game. And this is where turnovers, field position, making big stops, playmakers on offense and defense, making stops, making plays. These are the things that matter when you talk about two teams that are really, really well matched on paper. So I can't wait to watch this game. I think it's going to be a really good one.
7:30 start, kickoff, probably about 7:40 actual kickoff, ESPN2. Both Oregon and Washington coming off a bye week, which is kind of unusual. We haven't seen that in a while where both teams have had the bye. I think it probably helps Washington more. They get the chance to really get healthy. Oregon State, of course, is going to be without their big tight end, Luke Musgrave. How long is he out for? Do you guys know?
No, don't know. And then it sounds like Chance Nolan is probably going to still be out, so they're probably going to still go with – Ben Gobranson, their freshman, their backup, who's played the last few games and frankly has looked pretty good doing it. But he, you know, we talked for the guys with Beaver Blitz, talked to Carter Bonds about it, and it sounds like Gobranson's kind of more their high floor, low ceiling guy. The way they were talking about it, he sounded more kind of Jake Browning-ish to me, whereas Nolan is a guy who could make more happen with his legs, can probably be more of a playmaker in that way, a bigger guy. So it sounds like Gobranson's going to be the quarterback tonight. We'll see how that affects what Washington tries to do against him.
All right. Are you gonna post the entire podcast or just when we start talking about football, Chris?
Oh, no. We're going to be posting it where we talk football.
Okay.
Because I don't have a dump button available
Scott,
to me.
Scott, one more time. Yell, get off my lawn.
Get off my lawn and clouds, get away from me.
Scott.
And make sure there's parking in S1.
Can you believe what can you even guess what he's going to be like when he actually is old?
Well, he's already told us, Kim, so we don't have to worry about that.
All right. Hey, for all of us at Dogman.com, I'm Kim Grenolds, along with the old man Scott Eklund and Chris Fetters. Go Dogs.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Hosts Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.